See, said the kangaroo. Rincewind raised his hands and backed away. Are we talking teeth and stings and fangs?
Just look at that painting there, mate.
What, the one of the kangaroo?
Which one's that, mate?
Rincewind looked along the wall. The kangaroo picture wasn't where he remembered it. I could have sworn...
That's the one I want you to look at over there.
Rincewind looked at the stone. What it showed, outlined in red ochre, were dozens of hands. He sighed. Oh, right, he said wearily. I see the problem. Exactly the same thing happens to me.
What are you talking about, mister?
It's just the same with me when I try to take snaps with an iconograph, said Rincewind. You set up a nice picture, the demon paints away, and when you look at it, whoops, you had your thumb in the way. I must have got a dozen pictures of my thumb. Now I can see your lad there doing his painting in a bit of a hurry, got his brush all ready, and then splosh. He'd forgotten to take his hand off the...
No, it's the painting underneath I'm talking about, mister.
Rincewind looked closer. There were fainter lines there, which you'd think were just flaws in the rock if you weren't looking. Rincewind squinted. Other lines seemed to fit. Yes, someone had painted figures. They were... He blew away some sand. Yes, they were curiously familiar.
Yes,
said Scrappy, his voice apparently coming from a distance.
Look a bit like you, don't they?
But they're... He began. He straightened up. How long have these paintings been here?
Well, let's see, said the kangaroo. Out of the sun and the weather, nothing to disturb them. 20,000 years?
That's not right.
Nah, true. Probably 30,000 in a nice sheltered spot like this.
But these are... That's my...
Of course, when I say 30,000 years, said the kangaroo, I mean it depends how you look at it. Even them hand paintings on the top there have been 5,000 years, see? And those faint ones, oh yeah, got to be pretty old, tens of thousands of years, except...
Except what?
They weren't here last week, mate.
You're saying they've been here for ages, but not for very long.
See, I knew you was clever.
And now you're going to tell me what the hell you're talking about?
Right.
Excuse me. I'll just find something to eat. Rincewind lifted up a rock. There were a couple of jam sandwiches underneath. The wizards were civilized men of considerable education and culture. When faced with being inadvertently marooned on a desert island, they understood immediately that the first thing to do was place the blame.
It really was very clear, shouted Ridcully, waving his hand frantically in the air at the place where the window had been. And I put a sign on it.
Yes, but you've got a do not disturb sign nailed to your study door, said the senior wrangler. And you still expect Mrs. Whitlow to bring you your tea in the mornings. Gentlemen, please, said Ponder Stibbons. We've got to sort some things out right now.
Yes, indeed, roared the Dean, and it was his fault. The sign wasn't large enough.
I mean, we have to...
There are ladies present, snapped the senior wrangler.
Lady,
Mrs. Whitlow uttered the word carefully and with deliberation, like a gambler putting down a winning hand. She stood primly watching them. Her expression said, I'm not worried, because with all these wizards around, nothing bad can happen. The wizards adjusted their attitudes.
I do apologise if I've done something wrong, she said.
Oh, no, no, not wrong, said Ridcully quickly. Not exactly wrong as such.
Anyone could have done it, said the senior wrangler. I could hardly read the lettering myself.
And taking the broad view, it's certainly better to be stuck out here in the fresh air and sunshine than in that stuffy study. Ridcully went on.
That's quite a broad view, sir, said Ponder doubtfully.
And we'll be back home in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail, said Ridcully, beaming.
Unfortunately, this doesn't look a very agricultural sort of...
Ponder began.
Figure of speech, Mr. Stibbons, figure of speech.
The sun's going down, sir, Ponder persisted, which means it'll be night time soon.
Ridcully looked nervously at Mrs. Whitlow, and then at the sun.
"Is there a problem?"
said Mrs. Whitlow.
"Oh, good heavens, no," said Ridcully hastily.
"I noticed the little hole in the wall doesn't seem to have come back,"
said Mrs. Whitlow.
It's a little prank, is it? The housekeeper went on. I'm sure you gentlemen will have your fun, and no mistake.
Yes, that's... But A should be grateful if you would send me back now, Arch-Chancellor. We're doing the laundry this afternoon, and I'm afraid we're having a lot of trouble with the Dean's sheets.
The Dean suddenly knew how a mosquito feels in the beam of a searchlight.
We'll sort this out directly. Never fear, Mrs. Whitlow, said Ridcully, not taking his eyes off the wretched Dean. In the meantime, why don't you take a seat and enjoy the rather wonderful sheets? I mean, sunshine.
There was a clack as the deck chair folded itself up. Then it sneezed.
Ah, back with us again, librarian, Ridcully went on, as the orangutan sprawled in the sand. Help him up, please, Mr. Stibbons. A word to the rest of you, please, if you'll excuse us a moment. Mrs. Whitlow, faculty meeting.
The wizards went into a huddle.
It was tomato sauce, all right, said the Dean hurriedly. I just happened to be having a snack in bed, and you know how that stuff stains.
I'm sure we're not at all interested in the state of your sheets, Dean, said Ridcully.
No, indeed, said the senior wrangler brightly.
Not us, said the lecturer in recent runes, slapping the Dean on the back.
We have to get back, said Ridcully. We can't spend the night alone with Mrs. Whitlow.
It wouldn't be decent.
I don't see why anyone should make a fuss about a bit of tomato sauce. I at least cleaned all the beans off.
Well, we're not actually alone, are we? Not as such, said the lecturer in recent runes. I mean, there's seven of us, not including the librarian.
Yes, but we're all alone together, said Ridcully urgently. There could be talk.
What about, said the chair of indefinite studies, who sometimes lagged behind. You know, said the lecturer in recent rooms. Seven men and one woman. It doesn't bear thinking about.
Well, I, for one, will certainly veto any suggestion about ordering another six women, said the chair firmly.
Perhaps the hole will open again, said the senior wrangler.
I doubt it, said Ridcully. Ponder says that our coming through probably altered the thaumostatic balance. What do you think, Dean?
Just tomato sauce, said the Dean. It could have happened to anyone.
I meant about our being marooned on this island, said Ridcully. Any ideas, anyone?
We must tackle this as a team.
What shall we tell Mrs. Whitlow? Whispered the senior wrangler. She thinks this is a prank.
Senior Wrangler, we are elderly, wise, and experienced wizards, said Ridcully. Students are prankers.
Pranksters, possibly, mumbled Ponder Stibbons.
Whatever, we do not indulge in pranks.
With us, it's a fully-fledged, gold-embossed cock-up, or nothing, said the lecturer in recent rooms.
I don't see why people are making such a fuss about a bit of tomato sauce that hardly even shows up, muttered the Dean.
No one brought any suitable spells, said Ridcully.
At 4 in the morning, for the beach, said the lecturer in recent rooms.
Of course not.
Then we shall have to fall back on our own resources.
There's bound to be a ship along sooner or later. The point is, gentlemen, he added, that we are the product of a university education.
I'm quite sure primitive people have no difficulty surviving in a place like this, and think of all the things we have that our rude forefathers lacked.
Mrs. Whitlow, for a start, said the chair of indefinite studies.
She wouldn't put up with rudeness of any sort, the senior wrangler agreed.
Do you know anything about boats, Dean?
I believe you got a brown for rowing when you were slimmer, said Ridcully. Please note that this question did not raise the matter of sheets in any way.
Well, indeed, boat building is not a difficult task, said the Dean, surfacing.
Even primitive people can build boats, and we are civilized men, after all.
Then you're head of the boat building committee, said Ridcully.
Senior Wrangler can help you. The rest of you fellows had better see if there's any fresh water and food. Knock down a few coconuts, that sort of thing.
And what will you do, Arch-Chancellor? Said the senior wrangler, nastily.
"I shall be the Protein Acquisition Committee," said Ridcully, waving his fishing rod.
"You going to stand there and fish again? What good's that going to do?"
"It might result in a fish dinner, Senior Wrangler."
"Has anyone got any tobacco?" said the Dean. "I'm dying for a smoke."
The wizards went off about their tasks, complaining and blaming one another. And just inside the forest, in the leafy debris, roots unfolded and a number of very small plants began to grow like hell.
"This is the last continent," said Scrappy. "It was put together last and differently."
"Looks pretty old to me," said Rincewind. "Ancient. Those hills look as old as the hills."
"They were made 30,000 years old," said the kangaroo.
"Come on, they look millions of years old."
"Yep, 30,000 years ago, they were made a million years ago. Time here is," the kangaroo shrugged, "not the same. It was glued together differently, right?"
"Search me," said Rincewind. "I'm a man sitting here listening to a kangaroo. I'm not arguing."
"I'm trying to find words you might understand," said the kangaroo reproachfully.
"Good, keep going, you'll get there. Want a jam sandwich? It's gooseberry."
"Nah, strictly herbivore, mate. Listen."
"Unusual, gooseberry jam. I mean, you don't often see it. Raspberry and strawberry, yes, even blackcurrant. I shouldn't think more than one jar of jam in 100 is gooseberry. Sorry, do go on."
"You're taking this seriously, are you?"
"Am I smiling?"
"Have you ever noticed how time goes slower in big spaces?"
The sandwich stopped halfway to Rincewind's mouth. "Actually, that is true, but it only seems slower."
"So? When this place was made, there wasn't much space and time left over to work with, see? He had to budge them together to make them work harder. Time happens to space, and space happens to time."
"You know, I think there could be a plum in it too," said Rincewind, his mouth full. "And maybe some rhubarb. You'd be amazed how often they do that sort of thing. You know, stuff cheaper fruitine. I met this man in an inn once. He worked for a jam maker in Ankh-Morpork, and he said they put in any old rubbish and some red dye. And I said, what about the raspberry pips? And he said they make them out of wood. Wood! He said they'd got a machine for stamping them out. Can you believe that?"
"Will you stop talking about jam and be sensible for a moment?"
Rincewind lowered the sandwich. "Good grief, I hope not," he said. "I'm sitting in a cave in a country where everything bites you and it never rains, and I'm talking, no offence, to a herbivore that smells of a carpet in a house where there are a lot of excitable puppies, and I've suddenly got this talent for finding jam sandwiches and inexplicable fairy cakes in unexpected places, and I've been shown something very odd in a picture on some old cave wall, and suddenly said kangaroo tells me time and space are all wrong and wants me to be sensible. What, when you get right down to it, is in it for me?"
"Look, this place wasn't finished, right? It wasn't fitted in, turned around."
The kangaroo looked at Rincewind as if reading his mind, which was the case.
"You know, like with a jigsaw puzzle, the last piece is the right shape, but you have to turn it round to fit, right? Now, think of the piece as a bloody big continent that's got to be turned around through about 9 dimensions, and you're home and..."
"Dry," said Rincewind.
"Bloody right."
"I know this may seem like a foolish question," said Rincewind, trying to dislodge a gooseberry pip from a tooth cavity, "but why me?"
"It's your fault. You arrived here, and suddenly things had always been wrong."
Rincewind looked back towards the wall. The earth trembled again. "Can you hop that past me again?" he said.
"Something went wrong in the past."
The kangaroo looked at Rincewind's blank, jam-smeared expression and tried again.
"Your arrival caused a wrong note," it ventured.
"What in?" The creature waved a paw vaguely.
"All this," it said. "You could call it a bloody multi-dimensional knuckle of localized phase space, or maybe you could just call it the song."
Rincewind shrugged. "I don't mind putting my hand up to killing a few spiders," he said, "but it was me or them. I mean, some of those come at you at head height."
"You changed history."
"Oh, come on. A few spiders don't make that much difference. Some of them were using their webs as trampolines. It was a case of boing, and then the next moment...
No, not history from now on. History that's already happened, said the kangaroo.
I've changed things that already happened long ago.
Right.
By arriving here, I changed what's already happened?
Yep. Look, time isn't as straightforward as you think.
I never thought it was, said Rincewind, and I've been round it a few times. The kangaroo waved a paw expansively.
It's not just that things in the future can affect things in the past, he said. Things that didn't happen but might have happened can affect things that really happened. Even things that happened and shouldn't have happened and were removed still have, call them shadows in time. Things left over which interfere with what's going on. Between you and me, it went on, waggling its ears, it's all just held together by spit now. No one's ever got round to tidying it up. I'm always amazed when tomorrow follows today, and that's the truth.
Me too, said Rincewind. Oh, me too.
Still, no worries, eh?
I think I'll lay off the jam, said Rincewind. He put the sandwich down. Why me? The kangaroo scratched its nose.
It's got to be someone, it said.
And what am I supposed to do, said Rincewind.
Wind it into the world.
There's a key?
Might be. Depends.
Rincewind turned and looked at the rock pictures again. The pictures that hadn't been there a few weeks ago and then suddenly had always been there. Figures holding long sticks, figures in long robes. The artist had done a pretty good job of drawing something quite unfamiliar. And in case there was any doubt, you only had to look at what was on their heads.
Yeah, we call them the pointy heads, said the kangaroo. He started catching fish, said the senior wrangler. That means he'll come over all smug and start asking what plans we've got for making a boat any minute. You know what he's like.
The dean looked at some sketches he'd made on a rock. How hard can it be to build a boat, he said. People with bones in their noses build boats, and we are the end product of thousands of years of enlightenment. Building a boat is not beyond men like us, senior wrangler.
Quite, dean.
All we have to do is search this island... until we find a book with a title like Practical Boat Building for Beginners.
Exactly. It'll be plain sailing after that, Dean.
He glanced up and swallowed hard. Mrs. Whitlow was sitting on a log in the shade, fanning herself with a large leaf. The sight stirred things in the senior wrangler. He was not at all sure what they were, but little details like the way something creaked when she moved... twanged bits of the senior wrangler as well. You all right, senior wrangler? You look as if the heat is getting to you.
Just a little... warm, Dean.
The Dean looked past him as he loosened his collar.
Well, they haven't been long, he said.
The other wizards were walking down the beach. One advantage of a long wizarding robe is that it can be held like an apron, and the chair of indefinite studies was bulging at the front even more than usual.
Found anything to eat, said the senior wrangler.
Yes.
Fruit and nuts, I suppose, grumbled the dean.
Yes, and then again no, said the lecturer in recent runes. It's rather odd.
The chair of indefinite studies let his burden spill out onto the sand. End of side four.
Side five. There were coconuts, other nuts of various sizes, and assorted hairy or knobbly vegetable things.
All rather primitive, said the Dean, and probably poisonous.
Well, the Bursa's been eating things like there's no tomorrow, said the lecturer in recent runes.
The Bursa burped happily.
That doesn't mean there will be, said the Dean. What's up with you fellas? You keep looking at one another.
We've tasted a few things too, Dean, said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Ah, I see the gatherers have returned,"
roared Ridcully happily, walking towards them. He waved three fish on a string.
"Anything resembling potatoes in there, chaps?"
"You're not going to believe any of this," mumbled the lecturer in recent runes. "You're going to accuse us of trickery."
"What are you talking about?" said the Dean. "They don't look very tricky to me."
The Chair of Indefinite Studies gave a sigh.
"Have a coconut,"
he said.
Did they go off bang or something?
No, nothing like that at all.
The Dean picked up a nut, gave it a suspicious look, and banged it on a stone. It fell into two exact halves. There was no milk to spill out. Inside the husk was a brown inner shell full of soft white fibres. Ridcully picked up a bit of it and sniffed.
Oh, I don't believe this, he said. That's not natural.
So, said the Dean, it's a coconut full of coconut. What's odd about that, then?
The Arch-Chancellor broke off a piece of the shell and handed it over. It was soft and slightly crumbly. The Dean tasted it.
Chocolate, he said.
Ridcully nodded.
Dairy milk by the taste of it, with a creamy coconut filling.
That's not possible, said the Dean, his cheeks bulging.
Spit it out, then.
I think I might perhaps try a little more, said the Dean, swallowing. In a spirit of inquiry, you understand.
The senior wrangler picked up a knobbly, bluish nut about the size of a fist and tapped it experimentally. It shattered, but was held together because of the gooey contents. The smell was very familiar. A careful taste confirmed it. The wizards regarded the nut's innards in shocked silence.
"It's even got the blue veins," said the senior wrangler.
"Yes, we know. We tried one," said the Chair of Indefinite Studies weakly. "And after all, there is such a thing as breadfruit."
I've heard of it, said Ridcully, and I might believe there's such a thing as a naturally chocolate-covered coconut, because chocolate's a kind of, potato.
A bean, possibly, said Ponder Stibbons.
Whatever, but I damn well don't believe there's such a thing as a mature, longhorn blue, runny cheese nut.
He prodded the thing.
But nature does come up with some very funny coincidences, Arch-Chancellor, said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. Why, I myself, as a child, once dug up a carrot, which, most amusingly, looked just like a man with an...
said the Dean. It was only a little sound, but it had a certain portentous quality. They turned to look at him. He'd been peeling away the yellowing husk from something like a small bean pod. What he now held were...
Ha! Yes, good joke, said Ridcully. They certainly don't grow on tree.
I didn't do anything. Look, it's still got bits of pith and stuff on it, said the Dean, waving the thing wildly.
Ridcully took it, sniffed it, held it up to his ear and shook it, and then said quietly,
Show me where you found it, will you?
The bush was in a small clearing. Dozens of the little green shoots hung down between its tiny leaves. Each was tipped by a flower, but the flowers were curling up and falling off. The crop was ripe. Multicoloured beetles zoomed away from the bush as the Dean selected a pod and peeled it open, revealing a slightly damp white cylinder. He examined it for a few seconds, then put one end in his mouth, took a box of matches from a pocket in his hat, and lit up.
Quite a smooth smoke, he said.
His hand shook slightly as he took the cigarette out of his mouth and blew a smoke ring.
Cork filter, too, he said.
Well, both tobacco and cork are naturally occurring vegetable products,
quavered the Chair of Indefinite Studies.
Chair?
Said Ridcully.
Yes, Arch-Chancellor.
Shut up, will you?
Yes, Arch-Chancellor.
Ponder Stibbons broke open a cork tip. It was a tiny ring of what might well have been...
Seeds, he said. But that can't be right, because...
The Dean, wreathed in blue smoke, had been staring at the nearby vines. Has it occurred to anyone else that those pods are remarkably rectangular, he said.
Go for it, Dean, said Ridcully.
A brown outer husk was pulled aside.
Ah, said the Dean.
Biscuits.
Just the thing with cheese.
Said Ponder. He pointed. Just beyond the bush, a couple of boots lay on the ground. Rincewind ran his fingers over the cave wall. The ground shook again.
What's causing that?
He said.
Oh, some people say it's an earthquake. Some say it's the country drying up. Others say it's a giant snake rushing through the ground, said Scrappy.
Which is it?
The wrong sort of question.
They definitely looked like wizards, thought Rincewind. They had that basic cone shape, familiar to anyone who'd been to Unseen University. They were holding staffs, Even with the crude materials available to them, the ancient artists had managed to portray the knobs on the ends. But Yu hadn't even existed 30,000 years ago. Then he noticed, for the first time, the drawing right at the end of the cave. There were a lot of the ochre handprints on top of it, almost, and the thought expanded in his mind in a sneaky way, as though someone had thought that they could hold it down onto the rock, prevent it, this was a silly thought he knew, prevent it from getting out. He brushed away some dust. "Oh, no," he mumbled. It was an oblong box. The artist hadn't got the hang of conventional perspective, but there was no doubt that he'd tried to paint hundreds of little legs. "That's my luggage." "Always the same, right?" said Scrappy behind him. "You arrive okay, and your luggage ends up somewhere else."
"Thousands of years in the past?"
"Could be a valuable antique.
It's got my clothes in it.
They'll probably be back in style then."
"You don't understand. It's a magical box. It's supposed to end up where I am."
"It probably is where you are. Just not when."
"What? Oh.
I told you time and space were all stirred up, didn't I? You wait till you're on your journey. There's places where there's several times happening at once and places where there's hardly any time at all. And times when there's hardly any place. You've got to sort it out, right?"
"What, like shuffling cards?" said Rincewind. He made a mental note about on your journey.
"Yep."
"That's impossible."
"You know, I'd have said so too. But you will do it. Now you'll have to concentrate about this bit, right?" Scrappy took a deep breath. "I know you're going to do it because you've already done it."
Rincewind put his head in his hands.
"I told you about time and space here being mixed up," said the kangaroo.
"I've already saved the country, have I?"
"Yep."
"Oh, good. Well, that wasn't so difficult. I don't want much. A medal, perhaps? A grateful thanks of the population, maybe? A small pension and a ticket home?" He looked up. "I'm not going to get any of that, though, am I?"
"No, because..."
"I haven't already done it yet."
"Exactly. You're getting the hang of it. You have to go and do what we know you're going to do because you've already done it. In fact, if you hadn't done it already, I wouldn't be here to make sure it gets done, so you'd better do it."
"Facing, terrible dangers?"
The kangaroo waved a paw. "Slightly terrible," it said.
"And go for many miles of a parched and trackless terrain?"
"Well, yeah. We haven't got any other sort."
Rincewind brightened up slightly. "And I'll meet comrades whose strengths and skills will be a great help to me."
"Don't bet on it."
"Any chance of a magic sword?"
"What would you do with a magic sword?"
"Fair enough, fair enough. Forget the magic sword. But I've got to have something. Cloak of invisibility? Potion of strength? Something like that?"
"That stuff's for people who know how to use them, mister. You'll have to rely on your native wit."
"I've got nothing? What sort of a quest is that? Can't you give me any hints?"
"You may have to drink some beer," said the kangaroo. It cringed back for a moment, as if confident of facing a storm of objections.
Rincewind said, "Oh, right. Oh, well, I know how to do that. What direction am I supposed to go?"
"Ah, you'll find it."
"And when I get to where I'm going, what am I supposed to do?"
"It'll be obvious, right?"
"And how will I know I've done it?"
"The wet will come back."
"The wet what?"
"It'll rain."
"I thought it never rained here," said Rincewind.
"See? I knew you were smart."
The sun was setting. The rocks around the edge of the cave glowed red. Rincewind stared at them for a while and reached a brave decision. "I'm not the man to shirk when the fate of whole countries is in the balance," he said. "I will make a start at dawn to complete this task which I have already completed by Hoki, or my name isn't Rincewind."
"Rincewind," said the kangaroo.
"Indeed."
"Well said, mate. Then I should get some sleep if I were you. Could be a busy day tomorrow."
"I've not been found wanting when duty calls," said Rincewind. He reached into a hollow log, and after some rummaging around, pulled out a plate of egg and chips. "See you at dawn, then." 10 minutes later, he stretched out on the sand with the log as his pillow and looked up at the purple sky. Already a few stars were coming out. Now there was something. Oh, yes. The kangaroo was lying down on the other side of the waterhole.
Rincewind raised his head. You said something about when he created this place, and you talked about him.
Yep.
Only